Do you ever wake up and ask yourself what's really going on in the world you live in? It's time for you to be aware. It's the number one alternative website on the planet. TruthIsScary.com. Daily stories. Log on daily to get the latest information on the stories that radio and TV wouldn't dare to cover. Experience our curriculum with over 20 topics from government conspiracies and extraterrestrials to meditation and nutrition, celebrity interviews. Watch exclusive videos with your favorite celebrities and find out what their alternative views are. It's your source for the information you won't find in the mainstream media. It's TruthIsScary.com. Log on today and be aware. TruthIsScary.com.
This is the Red Pill.
Hey, this is the Red Pill with Joseph Peterson and Steve McManus. How are you tonight, Steve?
You know, I'm doing great, and I'd like to say hello to our person in our chat room. That's pretty cool. And welcome once again to the Red Pill. And Joe, how you been this week?
I am doing great. Tonight is Monday night, May the 18th. I'm feeling really good. You know, even though the world is a little bit crazy, you know, we also have to think about, you know, what's coming and what we can do about it. So,
well,
no, I feel good.
I guess it won't matter then that today is the first day of Mercury going retrograde.
Somebody else mentioned that to me today. And, you know, I don't know if that's always a bad thing, you know, especially, you know, maybe for certain people it's a good thing. For me, I haven't felt any results from it. You know, I haven't felt anything yet, but I do know there's a new moon. And I do know that up until sometime like the second week of June, Mercury's going to be in retrograde. So we all got to be aware of that. And things might take a little bit longer than usual. But
The energies do shift.
Get me down.
During that period, the energies do shift. And what it's good for is introspection, review of things, using your creative energies to create things. You only have to be careful of anything technological or electronic or mechanical and of travel or of signing documents, because those energies that are at play there do not do well when the type of energy that is hitting us during a retrograde period, and all retrograde means is that it looks like it's going backwards in the sky. You know, Mercury looks like it's moving backwards rather than its usual spin in the right direction. It isn't moving backwards. It just looks that way, and so they call it in retrograde. And
that's
so
great. Okay.
Some people say, well, it's just a bunch of crap. There's nothing really going on. It's just because it's in retrograde, and they've given some superstitious mumbo-jumbo to it. And other people say, well, no, it's because the energies do shift when things move differently. You know, anytime you run two magnets near each other, you can see that they move differently with a change in environment. So it's kind of sort of like on that level. And so there's two schools
right.
of thought. One of them is, yeah, it's nothing. And the other one is, let's look at the empirical data. Every time it's in retrograde, do we see a difference in the data? Like what has happened during that period? And I do see data, so I do tend to lend it some credence. And I think that energy might actually play into the momentum of information and activity as related to our subject tonight.
Well, yeah, I was going to bring that up. Now, I'll tell you my personal opinion. I have never really consciously felt any effects from Mercury being in retrograde. I try not to put that into my consciousness and my awareness, so thank you very much. But I figure if I don't think about it and I don't know about it, it doesn't affect me, and that's what's worked for me. But anyway, that's just my own personal way of dealing with it. But from what you're saying is that from now until the middle of June here would not be a good time to start a revolution.
Now
am I
is the
correct
time.
On
that? Yeah, if you
the
believe it.
Planet.
If this is right. If this is what you hold to be, you give it any credence, then you wouldn't be traveling now. You'd wait until the middle of June. You wouldn't sign any contracts or anything binding. You would wait until the middle of June. You would, however, make use of this time to design or create something and use your creative energies, whether it be writing or programming or sculpting or artwork or communication or putting together a, you know, the material for your speaking tour or whatever your thing is. This would be a good time, according to those that
planning,
you know, that feel that this is, yeah, that this would be a good time to put
this
together.
Your plotting time. So if you were to do a revolution between now and June, what is it, 15th or something? June 11th.
Yeah.
You should plan your revolution. Now, it's coincidental that that Jade Helm thing isn't starting till like June 15th. So you think they're waiting on purpose?
let's take a look at that.
It's not starting till the middle of June, you know? Maybe they're waiting
on
purpose.
This is the same military that uses remote viewers. And there are people that say that's
true.
A bunch of
they
Huey. And I can tell you that
Remember
that's
who
not
runs
a bunch of Huey because I am a remote viewer. So,
they
use
that.
Remote viewers.
Trust
they
me.
Use psychics.
I saw the Go movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, the reason I brought this up tonight as the topic is because I've seen a lot of chatter on there, and not only from alternative media, but mainstream media. I've seen polls out there, you know, 90% of Americans think we're headed towards a revolution by the end of the summer. I mean, you know, you've had already a bunch of stuff going on in Baltimore. And before that, people forgot there was a huge standoff in Texas, you know, like a year and a half ago. So you've already had incidences of unrest, let's say, within the United States that you didn't see 10 years ago. Easily see that the climate has changed within the country, and we are actually starting to follow suit with what's been happening in Europe. I see this, and this is probably other people seeing it, and this is why I see all this chatter. And my question to you, Steve, is do you think this is a real possibility, and do you think this is even the right way to go if we really want change in this world and in this country?
I find it distressing. You know, I don't like to see people in the street committing overt acts. It doesn't feel good to see it. It doesn't feel good to be involved. It doesn't feel good at all. But like I have said to people before, democracy doesn't taste good. It isn't supposed to. Because it means I have to include
people that I don't
care
for. Is it even the greatest form of government in the world? I mean, is it? Is it the best? Is it the only form?
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. You can't take democracy.
Do we need a government at all?
Well, no. Here's the thing. You do because, you know, people will devolve in a society of many people. It devolves to its lowest common denominator. It does not reflect the highest ideals we can achieve, like Hawking, you know, or like Mother Teresa, or the highest things we can achieve. You know, we can do it, but collectively we tend to go the other way. So
the violent,
you know,
negative.
Yeah, the whole bit. And it has to do with momentum, and it has to do with, you know, all of these different forces that sociologists study about, you know, mob mentality and crowd momentum. And the fomentation of, perception. You know, the internet has changed a lot about how we perceive things. You know, we don't have the TV to filter it anymore. We don't have a reporter who gets to tell us how it went. We can watch the TV reporter. We can listen to the radio reporter. And now we can see the cell phone video that's on the internet. And we have information we've never had before, and how we filter it has a lot to do with whether or not people get together and start chat rooms and talk to each other and have neighborhood meetings or whatever and start to say, hey, wait a minute, we need to do something because there's a tide turning and this is wrong and we need to get involved. And that's you're seeing more and more of that happen.
Yes, we are. And here's my thing. Now, are people finally in America going to wake up and realize that violence and revolution doesn't work? And look at history. I mean, this is what I really want to talk about with you. I mean, first of all, yes, change is needed. It is needed. It's always needed. But, you know, change comes through a word called evolution. Things evolve, and that's how they change. Real change, true change, comes from something called evolution. So let's look at this word revolution. So you take that word evolution, you put an R in front of it. Now, to me, a revolution means one turnaround. So a revolution around the sun is one time going around. So you actually end up right back where you started. And the revolution of a tire, like RPM, is one time around. Each revolution is one time around, so you still end up right back where you started. So to me, just the word revolution tells you exactly what you're going to get. You're going to end up right back where you started because you've gotten to the point where you have just revolved, not evolved. That's my concept of what the word revolution means. Now, I'd like to hear what you think about what the word itself, revolution, means. And people are throwing it around like it's something great and like it's going to create some great change and make a difference. And I'm trying to figure out if it really is. So your idea of what the word revolution means. We should probably call Jordan Maxwell. He could really tell us.
Mechanics and astrophysicists and all kinds of other people will agree with you that revolution means once around, 360-degree turn. You started at zero.
Right.
You went all the way to 100 and, you know, 300 and...
And that's what we're talking about.
And when you hit,
facts.
Right. But...
Mechanics.
Here's
the etymology of the word.
There are two things at play, and one of them is that when most people hear the word revolution, they're not thinking about where they're going to end up, and they're not thinking about what's going to be entailed. They're thinking about the part where you see people in the street and the crowd and the anger and the change that happens this week but not all year. And they see the venting
and then
the
cheering at the end.
Right, and they see the venting and blowing off of the steam and the we'll get those bastards and that type of stuff. That's what they think when they hear the word revolution. They think of, you know, we get to actually help change this and ransack this and you know, and change City Hall's mind and blah, blah, blah. That's what they're thinking. But, you know, it's important also to remember that.
Well, they've been programmed to think
science,
that.
Well, in political science, they don't teach you this. They teach you that what revolution means is that there's a platter. You know, make-believe platter. And on various portions, you know, pie slices on this platter are various forms of government all the way around the platter. There's a pie slice for every form of government. And when you have a revolution, you turn the platter kind of like a roulette wheel to whatever the vacuum is going to allow to exist.
Well, you've answered my question just by your explanation. First of all, you said two words, political scientist. Okay, political tells me right there where this is coming from.
Right.
All right, you told me that right there. Okay, science is what I'm interested in, and science tells me that revolution is once around.
Right.
Secondly, you said like a roulette wheel and it's gambling. And that is exactly the term that I would use for it if you're going by the political science definition of revolution. It's fucking gambling. Real gambling. Because you're taking a chance at whoever your leaders are in this revolution. Because every revolution needs a leader. This is why I don't think we have had a complete revolution here in the U.S. yet. There's no leader coming out and leading it. But if we look at the past revolutions and who led them and where we ended up, they haven't been that great. You really were twirling that roulette wheel. And look what you ended up with, you know. So I think either way,
well, you gotta remember
no matter what description you're using,
right?
Yeah, it either way, it doesn't solve the issue that we are trying to solve, which is to be free. Which is to be free. That is the purpose. Everybody thinks a revolution is going to make them free. And this is what all the people who lead these revolutions make the people think that whatever they do is going to, the end result is going to make them free. Well, I am looking around at all the countries that have revolted over the years, and I don't know of any of them right now that are free society. They're free for all.
You've got to remember that one
they're
person,
not free for free society.
One country's version of freedom, but one country's version of freedom is another country's version of crime. So,
but how about the universal version of freedom?
Okay, so when you say, you know, people say, like in Cuba, people...
Yes, okay, let's take that revolution first. The Cuban Revolution, okay. Let's talk about that.
Okay, most people in Cuba say that they're free. They say that, you know, it's pretty easy going there. And there are certain things they can't do because the government won't let you do it. You can't be critical of the government in Cuba. You can't have certain kinds of businesses.
Speech.
Right. And you don't have freedom of speech.
No freedom of commerce.
Right. So you, all of that stuff. But, and yet they consider themselves largely free, even though they have their critics, and their critics have to be very careful. And most of them are from outside the country now. But
and most of them are dead. Dad or leave the country.
Right. And so now you have this softening of our relations with them, and it's because Fidel...
Yeah, we're getting closer to them.
Well,
right?
Let's look at it. I mean, if we start getting really friendly with Cuba, and we, you know, they have never honored our lease for Guantanamo Bay. They have never cashed one check. Every month we send them a check for something like $1,500. That's all it is.
As
and
rent,
they've never
right.
cashed it. They don't recognize the lease. So we are there by force
right.
only. Okay?
Right.
And
right.
they
right.
tolerate it. Now, they know
right.
they could easily take Guantanamo Bay and just blow it to hell, but then they'd be held to pay. That's why they don't do it. What I want
right.
to know is,
so,
why do we maintain a base on the other side, on the far side of a communist country? Do we need it? I mean, all we do with it is use it as...
Dude, we think we need bases all over.
We have 973 bases around the world.
Right. We think we need them all over. So, you know, that's just the American way. But anyway, so that revolution, you know, you say that people think they're free, but we just named two or three ways they are not free.
Right.
So the truth of the matter is, no matter what Fidel Castro told them during their revolution, they are still not free. And he is a dictator, and he's ruled that place with an iron fist for a very, very long time. And it's only been over the past maybe 20 years that it's loosened up a little. So that was one revolution we could talk about that ended up as a dictatorship. Okay, while they're better off or worse off, they think they're better off. A lot of people left Cuba not thinking they were better off. So there's two sides to every story. You remember we had a ton of refugees after the Cuban Revolution, and people kept coming over, keep coming over. So, you know, how free is it? So, you know, that's okay. There's one example. That's a revolution. They spun the wheel. They trusted Fidel. They ended up with a dictatorship and a communist country. So, there's one right there. What about Stalin, the Russian Revolution?
Well,
how did that end up? Let's get
Stalin's
rid of that czar.
Case.
We have to get rid of that czar. He's a king. It's monarchy. We don't want that anymore.
Right.
Let's have a revolution.
And
let's kill the czar. So happened
you there? You had the white Russians and the red Russians and the black Russians. And that's why those drinks are named that. And they all fought with each other to see who was going to be top dog. And then we ended up with the Red Russians, who we came to know as the communists. And when Trotsky was, you know, one of the author of what we came to know as Bolshevik, you know, big party or Bolshevik communism, that we came to know as our, you know, main adversary for so many years, he wrote it. And when he brought that, what he had written with him, when he returned from the United States and got to Europe, he was put on a sealed train, sealed. Nobody else was on the train. The entire train was just for him. And it was funded. He was given instructions basically by the financial powers of the West. You know, Western bankers in America gave him instructions on what to do and what to say and what was going to be in his Communist Manifesto.
Right.
And when he finally got to Moscow with his manifesto and talked with Lenin and all the people that were involved at the upper levels, and they adopted this manifesto, and off they went and did their, you know, the rest is history.
Right.
He went there with instructions from Western bankers
on how to do
it. Supposedly, they're the antithesis of communism. They're capitalists. So, what interest do they have in making sure that communism
financial
takes? It's all financial, all of it.
Right. Well, that was going to be my next point.
Follow the money.
But I wanted to go over a couple more revolutions first. That was going to be my next point. Has there really ever been a revolution that was really incited and put together by the people? Or is it always a provocateur? Is that provocateur not necessarily in it for the best of reasons? So we just got final confirmation about the big Iranian revolution. Remember, it got rid of the Shah. Had to get rid of that evil Shah, right? We found, and what did they end up with? That stupid Muslim rule, right? But we find out the CIA admits now that it was behind the Iranian revolution. So
it was.
Here we go.
It was. And it was also, the CIA also put Shah Reza Pahlavi in power. So when Reza Pahlavi, we put him in power, and then we removed him, and we replaced him with the Iranian revolution.
All under the premise of a people's revolution. But it wasn't a people's revolution.
No, it wasn't.
It was a banker's revolution or a CIA revolution, whoever you want to really know who's behind everything. But let's just say it was not
like
done
you
in
say,
the interest of the people.
Like you say, if you get a provocateur or a team of them to work their way through a crowd, and in this case, the Internet, let's just say, to start pointing fingers and say, hey, he just did this, and they said that, and this is what they do, and look at this video, and blah, 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 and get people whipped into a frenzy about how pissed they should be. You can make the revolution whatever you design it to be.
Look at what happened in Egypt. Now, this was, the Arab Spring. Yay, Arab is waking up. Yay. But who provocateured that whole thing just to get rid of Mubarak, who they put in the first place? It was so obvious that was done by the CIA and the West. But everybody bought into it like it was this big, great turning point in the world, but really it was a great turning point for them because it was the beginning of the destabilization. Well, actually Iraq was the beginning and Afghanistan, but it was a very needed cog in the beginning of the destabilization of the Middle East. And again, it benefited the West and their interest, even though it was done under the premise of a people's revolution. So we have another example, and that was the Internet being used. And then Libya followed suit, and we see now that there's no real government in there. That's a free-for-all now. So maybe those people are free, but they got shit. But they did the same thing in Libya to get rid of Gaddafi, who they put in there. So I say that revolution is nothing more than a political tool for the West. Maybe, you know, people can go, way back it wasn't. I don't know if it ever wasn't, because I want to go back a little further. But, you know, we've seen Cuba, we've seen Iran. I could show you the Chinese Revolution. Oh, the Chinese Revolution. Look what they ended up with. We know who put Mao Zedong in power. Correct? We know what China is, nothing but a New World Order experiment.
China is, here's how certain parts of
there was no internet in the Chinese Revolution.
It's like a flow chart, okay? And what happens with this flow chart, or it's like the the ball bearing and the Cohen, the Rube Goldberg, thing where the string swings, lights the candle, and then the ball bearing drops, and then the thing swings around.
The old maze, the mouse and that mouse trap. Right.
That ball bearing is going to follow the path of least resistance, where the vacuum is, okay? It's going to go to the easiest place for it to reach at any given moment. It doesn't decide anything. It only goes where it's supposed to go. And so when you have a country like China and you have people that are really endeavoring very, very rigorously to foment a revolution, to change, radically change the way business is conducted in China and the way people, who's in power and who does what and so forth, that was a huge change. It went from really feudalism to now communism. That was a massive change.
Real extreme, radical change.
But
I wonder if those people are better off.
Well, look at China now. China is
better off.
One of the greatest. It's one of the greatest first world countries on the planet. It is the largest.
The quality of life for the people, the majority of the people
right now. It's good right now.
Okay.
China, what they've done is that
credit
has shifted. Well, they're freer than they were. But here's what's really happening. The credit,
they're not even
credit,
as free as us.
Well, in a way they are, because banker credit has shifted from the West. You can't get a credit card very easy here anymore. And now credit has shifted to China. So in China, you're employed, first of all, because the economy is amazing in China right now. It's all about the money, remember. There's a brand new coal-fired plant.
Yeah, I see.
Well, think about this. Every single month, there's a brand new coal-fired plant being turned on.
Polluting the environment.
That has been built, and it's being turned on in China.
Polluting the environment even more. And they do not care. They do not care. They're one of the worst environmental polluters in the world. The worst. So great.
Their rivers turn different colors at different times because of all the chemicals that are
red.
In red. Well, green,
so
red, purple.
Are they better off with this big, giant, communist, New World Order type government country? I don't think so.
When we had our
look
new
at what
deal.
They got to do. They have to wear masks. They have to
wear
masks
when we had our
in
new
the
deal, in the 30s and 40s, we had our New Deal. And then after the Second World War, we had the 50s and 60s, which was all about everybody gets a new refrigerator, everybody gets to move to the suburbs, everybody gets a job,
everybody,
all these
this
things
is the
happen.
Programming,
I got my new Pontiac. I got a color TV. It was all about, like, this is America, man. Look at all this stuff. I mean, this is cool. You get to take the kids on vacation, blah, 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 blah. And that's what they're doing in China right now. We didn't care about the environment in the 50s.
And Japan.
We didn't give a shit. And now that's the same in China. And Japan.
I do want to bring
now
up one thing, one
there.
Revolution in China. I want to bring up one revolution in China that I do believe was real, that they squashed so quickly you could have blinked your fucking eye, and that was Tiananmen Square. Now that revolution, or tried revolution, I believe was real in China. I believe the people actually got together and instigated that, and look what they did to them.
Well, there were
they showed them what happens when you fucking revolt.
There was Tiananmen Square, and that was very real, and it was... They squashed it themselves.
That's the People's Revolution.
But in the Boxer Rebellion, they actually sent the United States Marines to go over there and help kick ass and put that one down, because these people that were trying to do that revolution at that time were not the people that we intended to do business with.
Be in there. Yeah, exactly.
They were a wild card. And they weren't players. They were a wild card. We didn't want to have to deal with them. And so force was sent from outside the country to go in there and shut it down. And that's what happened.
Right.
So
that
really reveals what's really going on. It isn't that we don't want revolution. Is it good for big business on a global scale? If it is, go for it. If it isn't, they will shut you down.
Right. So my question is, has it always been this way? So I want to go to a commercial real quick, and then let's talk about the big dog, the American Revolution. All right?
All right.
Hey, it's Mike Hsu. Summer is coming. Are you ready to grow? Then contact the Northeastern Institute of Cannabis for the best summer school experience ever. At NIC, you can be ready to work in the growing cannabis industry in just weeks. Sign up before June 1st and receive a summer enrichment scholarship valued at 20% off their normal tuition. Visit instituteofcannabis.com or call 508-655-7420 to find out about weekly open houses and tours. At the Northeastern Institute of Cannabis, they teach you grow.
Take the blue pill and go back to sleep, or take the red pill and be aware. This is the Red Pill with Joseph Peterson and Steve McManus.
Hey, Joe.
All right. Yes.
Before we continue, tell me just a little bit. I know you're acquainted with NIC, Northeast Institute of Cannabis. Tell me just a little bit about what they're about. Like, what's their deal? Who are they? What do they do?
Well, Northeastern Institute of Cannabis is one of the first educational institutes in the Northeast, and that really is dedicated to educating the public, and not only the public, but the medical community and anyone else who wants to learn about cannabis, the truth about how cannabis can help you, and not only that, how they can get into the business. So they have a 12-course curriculum. It's a certification. And their certificate is being accepted by dispensaries and growers and who are in the legal business all throughout New England. And for those people who don't know, all the states in New England are now medical marijuana approved, including Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. So they try to service the New England area, educating people, helping them get jobs, but also helping them learn about why cannabis is not the demonized, bastardized drug that it has been. And how it can really help you in various aspects. And I personally have taken some courses there, and I've decided to become affiliated with them because I believe in what they're doing. You know, I personally know that the hemp conspiracy and the marijuana conspiracy is one of the biggest ones going on, and to see it starting finally to be out in the open and finally actually ending prohibition is something I'm very happy about. And since I'm already in education, I felt like it was a natural step for me to move into this and start educating people on something that I really feel can help them. So that, in a nutshell, is my little promo on Northeastern Institute of Cannabis.
Right.
What do you
on.
Think?
No, I think it's great. I think information is the real answer to most things, and that's what they're about. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, we discuss hemp very much and how you can use it. We discuss how to grow. We teach how to grow. We teach you how to use it medically. You know, we teach you how to work in a dispensary, how to work in a doctor's office. There's a lot of good things about it. It's a real community, and I really enjoy it. You know, it's
cool.
I think it's a good thing, and I really believe cannabis, and I have been saying this for years, is going to be the internet. You know, it's going to have the same boom that the internet did in the 90s. And, I'd like to be a part of that.
So, right.
And hopefully maybe someday you could be a part of it too.
Hard telling, not knowing.
You never know. All right, Steve. So let's talk about the American Revolution.
All right.
We all know that Americans have been here. People have been here for much longer before 1776.
Right.
Matter of fact, give you a little factoid about me that I don't tell very many people, but my family was one of the first original families on my grandfather's side to come to this country. We were pilgrims. So we believed in religious freedom. So my family left England because we were Congregationalists and we were being thrown out of the country because we did not believe in the Christian Church of England. So we decided to leave and come over to the New World, right about the time of the Mayflower. So I can say that people have been here for a very long time because I know by my family history. So at least 200 years before 1776, there were people here. So at a certain point, I suppose England decided that if we have so many of our people over there, we should colonize. Is this correct? I'd like to know how this came about, Stephen. You're a better historian than I am.
Yeah.
How did the colonization of America come about?
The information that would come back
We came over here to escape. We did not want to be colonists of England. We did not want to be English citizens anymore. That was the purpose why we came over here. I know that purposely because I have read old diaries. We wanted religious freedom. We wanted to practice our freedom over here. We wanted everyone else to have it. How did we end up to be a colony of England? That was not my family's intention, let's say.
Well, you know, you got to remember that information at that time was transmitted by boat.
Right.
And every time somebody would return to Europe from coming here, they would come back with information and with stuff, you know, lumber, or rather timber, you know, that they could be turned into lumber. And slaves.
Stuff from the Indians.
Well, yeah, from the people that live here already. And also...
Because we got along with them.
Some people got along with
did.
Them, and other people... Depends on who you encountered. If you encountered the soldiers that were off the boats, their only intention was to grab resources and make slaves. And so that's what they did.
But those soldiers didn't come till later. So this is what I'm saying... So you say people used to come here and not stay. They would return, come back to England, and then what happened?
Well, you know, they would get reports as to what they had seen, what was going on over there. And the reports
that
were
there were people here, right?
It was an endless land. It didn't seem to end. There was just timber as far as you could see. There was minerals everywhere. There was, you know, fertile soil and crops and places to live, but also resources to plunder. And when they heard this back in the old countries, you know, the
and they called
of power
it the New World,
information. Right.
The
and
New World.
So that's when it was like, oh, well, we got to send more boats and more people. We got to go make sure we claim that we're the first in line. So they did.
They were already empirical at the time, right? They had a couple of other territories that they had colonized. We weren't the first, right? Over there,
that's
in Europe,
correct.
They had
you got to remember that on the West Coast there was.
They just wanted to add to their.
Yeah, ever since like the 1500s, the Spaniards had been on the West Coast and in the Southwest. They'd been there a long time, so for some 200 years, you had Europeans. The Spaniards went on the West Coast, the waspy white folks from Europe were coming in onto the East Coast. But they came to the party late.
Right, right. So finally England got wind of what was going on. They decided to get their hooks in us and colonize it and make it one of their territories. So for, I don't know, how long did that last? 100 years or so?
Did give or take a century.
Okay, so at some point, a bunch of Masons came over. Right? Because there were no Masons here. Although I'm sure with, you know, they got thrown out of England too. So there were probably some coming over because they wanted religious freedom just like my family did. And Masons were not looked upon very favorably back in that day. So maybe some of the Masons came over here for the same reason to practice their Masonry freely. So we ended up with some Masons here. George Washington being one of them. Benjamin Franklin was a known Mason. I know Jefferson wasn't, but there were other ones who, they seemed to be the guys who got together and organized the American Revolution. I mean, to me, they seemed to be the organizers of it. Now, we look at them, they're Masons. We know what they practice. We know what their beliefs are. We know all that. We don't have to get into it. I really don't want to. So they formed, you know, I guess they were the provocateurs in this revolution, right? Am I correct with history, or am I totally off? I kind of fucked off in high school, so I don't remember all this. But
no, they do. Yeah, there's one way to look at it that they were, and you got to remember something that as provocateurs and as architects of something, whenever you hear the patriotic music, and you see these movies that talk about, you know, the reasons why we're about to stand up like men and go fight whomever, but they always quote the Declaration of Independence, always gets quoted, you know, to form a more perfect union, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, all those buzz phrases from this document. And the Constitution,
Jefferson wrote it. He was not a Mason.
No, but he was in the same room with a bunch of Masons. And you know, the Constitution was adopted in its format. It was the same framework and format that was from the Masonic Constitution.
Right.
It was already built.
People don't know
they changed. Right. They changed the content to fit what they were doing. So, the Masons basically built the framework for this country, and it's a Masonic country. The United States of America is a Masonic institution.
Right. It was founded by the Masons. It is built in Masonic architecture. If you look at the Capitol, there is Masonic architecture in the whole structure, even as far as the Washington Monument and the Capitol building and the way they're lined up. They're similar to the Vatican and the same thing over in England. So, I mean, it's all done Masonically and symbolically, and people don't get this. So, we had a bunch of people over here who were colonized by the English, paying taxes that they did not want to pay. They were not well organized enough, former revolution. So a bunch of Masons got together, and other people who were not Masons but politically, you know, connected, whatever, got together and decided to organize a revolution, which turned into a war, but it started out as a revolution against these oppressors. Now, my question is, what was the motive? What was their motive behind starting this revolution? And is it the same motive as it always is, which is money, financial gain, and power? And we know what these people practice and who they worship and the whole deal. We don't have to get into it. So was the American Revolution even brought about by the people, or was it politically or power motivated? Because we'll get into what we ended up with first, but that's the question I want to know. Was this even an organic revolution here in this country?
I think that most people felt that change was needed, certainly, and they wanted the British gone. The British did have an axe to grind against the Masons at that time, or certain factions within British government did.
Yes, they did.
And so, so there was not much, you know, the time was ripe for telling these colonists, you know, we can get rid of them. All we got to do is this and this. And everybody was like, yeah, let's get rid of them. And so it was easy to do in that regard. Everybody wanted them gone. But the people that would gain the most were the people, the landed gentry, the white men who owned land, most of whom were Masons.
Right.
So when they wrote that document, when they wrote all men are created equal, they meant white men who owned land. Those were the men that were created equal. They got to vote, and nobody else.
Because who was allowed in the Masons? Who is the only people allowed in the Masons? Right?
Men. Right.
White men who own land. I don't think you can get into Masons if you're a renter. I don't know if that's one of the entry-level questions or not, but I'm sure that's part of the requirement. So, we have this revolution. You say that the French helped fund it, and the Germans came and sent over some soldiers. I remember that, the Hessians, to help out. So we did get some aid from the French, and we got a little money from them, probably some French Masons, I'm sure, hooked up the boys over here, because we know it's called the Brotherhood, whether or not, no matter where they're staying. So they have this revolution. We win. La-da-da. Goodbye. We put together this government. Here's what we end up with. 13 colonies united under one government. 13 separate states united under one government. Now, they called this the New World, right? When everybody called this place over here the New World. Now, what is the New World Order? What is the concept?
Well,
of the
in
New
that
World?
In those days, the New World Order was the order that was controlling this New World. They were the New World Order, the order of members, the order of members of this new government. That was the order.
It's
the people
right on our
calling
collar.
The shots. Right. So when you
no
hear the phrase New World Order, what you're really hearing is the order.
It was originally us. It was originally assigned to America. This was the order of the New World. Correct?
Right. Right. And the thing is, the order, the word order, refers to those in power. That's what the word order refers to.
Well, of course.
This is the
Absolutely.
New World.
Order, any order. Look at the orders. You know, there's other orders out there.
Right.
There is OTO. If we're talking orders, there's the Jesuit order. So, right, who's in control? There's many orders out there. So this is the New World Order was the original term they used for, the government here. So we look at the structure of our American government. We look at the structure of what they want to call the New World Order in these days, in modern times, which would be a bunch of separate states united under one world government. Correct?
Under a new world government, which was the Western Hemisphere, right?
One world government, new world government, yes. We'll be united under one world. So my thing is, yes, we had a revolution. We got rid of being a colony. We're not under Mother England's rule, even though we still are. And we ended up with the New World Order here in the United States. So in the beginning, it looked like peaches and cream. Everybody was free. You know, the new democracy, this was a great concept. Nobody had ever done it before. We were a republic. They really sold us a nice bill of goods. And I got to tell you, for a while, it seemed to work. I really do. I think it worked. I mean, we had a few incursions here.
There's something to remember, though.
War of 1812.
There's something to remember. There's a perspective here that we need to keep a hold of. And that plays into today's perception of what revolution is today, right now, like today. And the perception that we have to hang on to is that back then it worked. Yes. If you were a man with white skin, if you were a woman,
because slavery came right soon after that.
So if you
were
a woman,
I was going to get into that next.
If you were a woman or if you were a child or if you were a person of color, you didn't have any of these benefits. You still had that daily drudgery slave type existence because you weren't a white man. So, it worked great for the Charlton Hestons of the world, but not for anybody else.
Right. There's another revolution that really, look at today. We're right where we were back then.
Well, look at today. That's what the fight
Taxation
is about.
Right.
All these people are up in arms in the streets of America. Why? Because the people who are not white men are saying that they've had enough.
Yes. Right. So it took a while for the people to realize it. But even the American Revolution put us right in the same place we started.
Right.
If not worse, after 200 years. It just took a little longer than it did in Russia and China. They just ushered in the dictatorships right away, and even the Iraq revolution. All these countries that ended up with dictatorships started out as a revolution of the people that was all provocateur, all of it. So my thing is, even us, we think we're in the land of the free, the home of the brave, have done the same thing. We started with a revolution. And we're right back where we started, if not worse off. And like you said, we named a couple of examples of true revolutions, but I really don't think it's the answer. And unfortunately, I think the people are going to get fooled again. You and I might listen to Roger Daltrey. We won't get fooled again. And I know you won't see me out on the streets with a gun or with a knife or with sticks throwing rocks at police officers. I know you won't see me doing that. I don't know about you personally. Because as I said in the beginning, the only true change comes from something called evolution.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but I think you and I have put out plenty of examples that revolution, while it may be a temporary fix and it may seem like some nice Kool-Aid for a while, it always ends up in the same place or worse. And you really are rolling the dice and spinning the wheel when you go that route of revolution. Agreed?
Oh, I agree. And, you know, what people fail to see, too, is that many of these white folks who are enjoying the lion's share of these freedoms, which are allotted to them, the police officers being the enforcement arm to keep the system running the way it has been, all of those people are going to get screwed. The same as the people who usually get screwed. It's never usually an emergency. The people that always get the privilege end of things, when they start losing privileges, when the people who are never usually poor start getting poor, and the people who are never usually trod upon start getting trodden upon, suddenly there's a problem. Because, now it's your turn, and now you see, I guess it's everybody this time. Yes, it's everybody this time. So now it's a problem.
Yes,
now
that's what made me join the fight. Let me tell you, that's what made me join the fight. The day I had that realization that I am one of them. I am now being trodden. Because, look, I'm white. I got to tell you, I mean, I've been down in the gutter. I've been down in the dirt. But I finally came to the realization that they are doing it to me now as well. I am now one of the downtrodden because it doesn't matter anymore. And I'm sure you feel the same way too. I'm sure you feel the same freaking way too. I am now in that classification. And there's more and more people like us who used to be middle class and living comfortably who are now not only having to live with much less money because of economic circumstances and because of different things that have happened, but the government is also taking more and trying to get more money than they ever have tried in the past and taking more freedoms for it. We're not getting anything more for our money. We're starting to feel ripped off. Bottom line.
Right.
And this is what I think, you know, when I was talking about at the beginning with the polls coming out and people saying revolution and the mainstream media starting to throw the word around. Well, this is what they're trying to push it. They want it. They want the new boss because they're going to be the new boss, same as the old boss. You know, I wish I could play that song, but the Blog Talk won't let me because it's copyrighted material and they'll get in trouble for it. But I got to tell you, that song was right on, you know. The ones who spurred us on sit in judgment of all wrong now, you know. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Nothing will change if there is any kind of revolution. If anything, we know what will end up. You and I and a lot more people are starting to realize that. But look, I really believe, and you know, I don't want to sound like one of those conspiracy theorists, but this thing in Texas is where this is going to start. I'm really getting a gut feeling that they are setting Texas up as a rogue state that is going to need martial law. We've already seen the shooting with the Islamic thing in this weekend in Waco where bikers just went on a freaking rampage. And, you know, you got Jade Helm coming up and all the guys, the militia type guys threatening to go after the government if they incursion on their rights. And, you know, I see the media setting Texas up as a rogue state as the stage for martial law and for this kind of revolution to start. And I think others are seeing it, and that's why you're getting these polls and you're getting people starting to chatter about revolution. And, you know, my gut feeling is that they're going to use Texas as a state scapegoat. I don't know. What do you think?
I think when you see, you know, the resources that we have that we drop on other countries all the time. I mean, we send in tanks and personnel and, you know, logistics and aircraft and all kinds of things. We have never seen that deployed here. We don't really understand as a people what
it's like to have that inside your country. Only in small doses. Like if you live in Baltimore, you know.
Right.
But not bombs. But you know what violence in your, if you live in LA even, you kind of know what it's like to have soldiers in the street if you were in the riots anyway and you lived in certain areas. So certain parts of the country have seen it. Even back in the 60s, we've seen the National Guard come in. We've seen these types of situations happen, but only in small pockets. And, you know, they're around certain events that seem to happen. This doesn't seem to revolve around any certain event. This just seems to revolve around a growing and building tension. Now, they may have an event that spurs the real deal off. But, you know, so you've seen instances of soldiers in the street. But you're right. For the most part, I don't know what it's like. You know, I've never seen it. And for the majority of Americans, they've never seen this kind of stuff at all. They don't know what it'll be like.
No, they don't know what it is, but think about the different little things that will actually have to take place. For instance, in larger cities where you have news helicopters that beam video back to the TV station, if drones are deployed in a given area, that airspace now becomes controlled. You will get no video because they will not allow those choppers to go in the air.
Yeah.
It'll be no fly.
No, I know.
That's it.
Oh, it's a whole different world. This is what people, when you start a revolution, they're just going to send in drones. And they have armed ones now. Don't kid yourself. But, you know, this would be a whole another level of revolution. I mean, we saw the 60s, what happened. And even that, I'm finding out as I dig deeper in the rabbit hole, seemed to be controlled in some sort of way. Do you understand what I'm saying? The way it started and ended,
right?
To me, more I researched, the more I look, was controlled. The 60s got squashed. That was the closest thing to a revolution we've had in America in modern times. But that got squashed and it turned into yuppies, you know? That turned to shit. But, you know, we haven't had it in a long time.
And every time you look at news, if you go online and you look at all the news outlets and you look at anything that's related to news, all of the national news is mostly either meaningless or it's fluff. And then you look at news that does have a hard edge to it, that you are getting some kind of real info. It's rare if it's local. It's rare if it's national. But they'll give you the hard edge information for things that are important to locally to people in other parts of the world, but that don't really matter to us as a nation. So we're still getting news that we don't really care. It's like, why? You're not telling me anything I need to know. So they're talking a lot about things that they're filling up the airwaves, but we're not getting the information.
Right.
And it's
so we got about 30 seconds left, Steve. 30 seconds left. You want to plug anything real quick?
NorthernPsychics.com.
NorthernPsychics.com. You can get yourself read. TruthIsScary.com. Best alternative news out there, handpicked by myself. You got the RedPill.com every Monday night. RedPill on Blog Talk every Monday night at 8 o'clock. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Steve, next week, let's talk about evolution and the difference and how we can make a positive change.
We'll do it.
Have a good one, Steve. Nice show. Very good flow.
I thought so.
Let's hang up. They're still.
Okay.
They're still. All right. Bye-bye.